Blog Talk Radio.
Spirit of Truth Ministry is delighted to bring you The Revelation of Jesus with Rick Sterling, where we test the beliefs of Christianity against the very words of Jesus that he gave his own eyewitness disciples. Join us for a unique and challenging study into truth, justice, and the kingdom of heaven. Hello and welcome, everyone. My name is Dennis Neufeld, and I am here with the Spirit of Truth Ministry research staff getting ready for another dynamic study entitled The Revelation of Jesus with Rick Sterling. Apropos of that, Rick Sterling is sitting right across from me, and so we are getting set to go. I have a couple of things I want to call your attention to, just a little housekeeping. The first is our original website. This is located at spiritoftruthministry.net/SSM. Lots of good stuff there. Our official website is located at spiritoftruthministry.net. There you will find our book, Spirit of the Church, by Rick Sling and me, Dennis Neufeld. You will also find lots of other great writing by Rick. We also have a mailing address in case you want to mail us anything. This address is at P.O. Box 1013, Calamasa, California, 92320. And our email address is spiritoftruthministry@gmail.com. I want to, I have to put the number in here for my friend who is 390. Okay, there we go. I had sent him a text yesterday, Rod, and given him the phone number to call in, and I reminded him now, and he says, "What's the number?" So I'm going to wait for just a minute until he can call in. Let us have prayer, and we will get started with our program. Father in heaven, Jesus Christ, Holy Spirit, we know that when we are born into this world, we are born spiritually blind. We have no vision, and we have to be taught to see. All of us are taught to see the wrong things by the world that we live in, a world filled with evil and evil intent. And I pray, Father, that you will, in your great mercy, open our eyes today to the truth. I thank you for this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Well, before we get started, I have on the line with me my very good friend, Rod, who has turned 62 today. He's a young buck. I'm going to just greet him real quick. Good morning, Rod. How are you doing today?
Well, thank you for that delightful opening. And may I just sort of press the edges of propriety and liberty just a little bit and add to your comments about me, 62 and still a stud.
60. He just said he's 62 and still a stud. I have him up on Tuesday. Happy birthday,
I
Rod.
I realize there are a lot of. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. There's a lot. I'm sure there's a lot of raised eyebrows, and a lot of skepticism about that last remark. But thank you for letting me.
Well, not from us. We understand, Rod. We completely agree. So, happy birthday! I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much.
And I'll call you later.
Okay. My greetings to everybody there. Thanks.
Okay. He just said his greetings to everyone. I'm saying, by the way, for those of you who are listening, I'm saying that because we don't have a speaker. I'm on earphones, and all of us don't have earphones, so we have to kind of relate what's going on the phone.
Translate.
Yeah. So, We are prayed over. We have we're up and running. So,
what did we talk about yesterday? Could you kind of give a quick synopsis of what yesterday was all about?
Well, actually,
I just said it, so it should be fairly easy.
You go ahead because I was
busy.
Busy, yeah.
Don, you don't want to? Okay. Well, yesterday we started out in the Garden of the Paradise of God.
Mm-hmm.
And I offered an idea of what, in fact, the serpent, the devil, Satan, the great deceiver, what his intention was. Most people think, well, he wanted to get the man and woman in the garden to sin so that he would have control of them. And he would have had a victory over God. Well, yeah, he would have. He did have a victory. But what did his victory give him? Control of this world? He already had that.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, we have now 19,382 people on our website that have signed up.
Well, we're on the way to 20,000. I remember when we were on the way to 1,000,
yeah,
and I
so long ago.
Didn't know how long that would take. Seemed almost like an impossibility, and now here we are, sneaking up on 20,000.
Mm-hmm.
Not that numbers matter.
It's an indicator.
It's an indicator that we are reaching some people, and that's the whole idea of Spirit of Truth Ministry.
Numbers reflect growth, and growth does matter.
Growth matters. God is involved in growth, not in stagnation. Like, God does not operate in a swamp.
So don't get off the subject.
I'm not. So, did the devil accomplish by his actions in the garden of the paradise of God? If we think of the garden as the promised land. Oh, now you want to say something?
Well, you just asked the question. I think I know the answer.
Okay, go ahead. So,
he derailed the kingdom of heaven.
Yeah. If you think of the garden as the promised land, what the promised land was to Israel, mm-hmm. the garden was to the man and the woman. God had a plan. God has a plan to restore good to this world. Yesterday, when I started out with the universe and how the universe operates in an ordered manner. It operates according to laws.
Yeah.
In fact, one proof of that among me is that what do scientists do? Yes, they do experiments. Okay, scientists do experiments. Why do they do experiments? Scientists observe. What are they looking for?
Facts, truth.
Laws, right?
Yes.
Scientists are looking for laws of behavior. Laws of behavior. Why? If there were no laws of behavior, would they be looking for that? But I mean,
no.
If the universe was operating chaotically, could there be any information drawn from it other than there's no order and everything is chaos and mayhem out there? No. Everything is ordered. And so the scientists, astronomers, the physicists, they are looking for behavioral traits. And then they can draw their conclusions and write their theories and theorems based upon observation. What have they seen? Everything operates according to fixed order.
Maybe that's the segue. I just insert a quick, simple anecdote. Recently, I was listening to some topics, different great courses, ones on that included the subject of space and time, space-time, mysteries of physics, and how time is and space are such a orderly, consistent, predictable aspect of the world, reality of the world. And as I was watching it, I'm thinking, okay, God's done all that nice, orderly stuff. What could screw it up? What did God do that allowed that to become less predictable and less orderly? He introduced a human being with the power of choice, and he honors that power of choice, which greatly complicates the whole situation.
Well, he may honor the power of choice, but he doesn't honor the choice that is made if it is against his fixed order.
He accommodates it for a while, which results in delays. Now we're back on topic.
Okay. I usually watch this certain video on the internet put out by Ben Davidson of Suspicious Observers, and he is a scientist, and his specialty is the sun and physical dynamics. And he is not standard mainstream scientist. And he and his group have offered some ideas that have come from their studies and observations. They were the first ones that I saw to suggest that the sun and the planets follow their fixed order because of magnetic fields and not gravity. Although gravity has a component of the dynamics of the solar system and the universe, it has a small contribution as when you take into consideration the magnetic fields.
It is a secondary component.
Yeah, and gravity. And small gravity. Yeah.
And by the way, it was Davidson.
Ben Davidson.
It was much more difficult to measure. It was much easier to measure gravitational fields and to prove gravitational issues than it was to try to prove magnetic issues.
Well, you've heard,
but when you look at Einstein's special theory of relativity, which uses a component of that to express how light is bent around stars. You know, he could never prove it mathematically because he was looking at it as gravity. But remember, light is both a wave and a particle.
It depends on what it's doing.
It depends on what it's doing. And gravity can work on a particle, but magnetism works on a wave. And so both of those can function. Which one is the more important?
Well, they're neither one more important, but when you see, you've heard the term dark matter.
Yeah.
Pretty much the scientists as they have been going out to prove dark matter. In other words, to find dark matter. They've not found it.
They're looking
in
for
fact,
it gravitationally.
Now they're leaving that dark matter idea far behind, and they are going to an electric universe with magnetic fields. It's not dark matter of gravitational pull. It's magnetism and magnetic fields. And whoa, lo and behold, now all the papers are coming out. And it is so obvious that it's magnetic fields and lines of magnetism.
Tesla was right.
So why am I, why, what's the purpose of this? The purpose is when scientists look for God, if they would use the same criteria and the same process that they use for everything else, like when they're out looking for dark matter and nothing adds up, you'll get the scientists that will absolutely use to move off of the dark matter hypothesis. Even though they can't find it, even though they can't prove it, even though they look for it, they know it's got to be there. They just can't find it.
Sounds like those scientists have the same issues that the people in the religion discipline have.
That's why I'm saying it, Larry, because that is exactly the problem. If you're looking for something that isn't there, you will never find it.
Right.
When I said yesterday that the galaxies, they're finding in their observation that the galaxies all spin at the same speed of rotation. Whoa. How does that just happen by chance?
That's about as good as throwing bits and parts of a clock together.
Now, of course, you know, and this was on Suspicious Observers, and who was quoting from an article. And the thing is, he was doing it to show that this is not a gravitational universe. If it was a gravitational universe and a Big Bang universe, then none of this order would be there, and galaxies would be rotating, even, you know,
rotating indiscriminately. And the issue is, if Big Bang worked, if it actually functioned the way they said it did, you would have the farther out, the galaxies farther out from the center of the Big Bang rotating much slower than you will find those that were rotating
in a gravitational field,
right?
But in a magnetic field,
they can be going at the same speed.
Just another little plug for great courses. As a fan that I am, one of their recent courses that came out was titled "What Einstein Got Wrong." Looks like there's more courses to come out.
Yep. Anyway, so with that said, we are looking at proof just by looking out in the universe. We're looking at proof that that was all designed to behave according to a fixed order. Scientists would call it laws of physics. A fixed order, not chaos. Chaos is what you would get if you didn't have a fixed order. God created everything. He created it to behave and operate according to a fixed order of what we would call laws of motion, laws of dynamics. And the proof that there is a God is proved by observation of the universe. You look in the universe, you're not going to see God. He's not going to wave at you from the universe. But you are going to see what God has done, that all of this behaves the way it was designed to behave, and the only way that it could operate without causing chaos. And we went from the macrocosm to the microcosm here on Earth, which is a part of this universe. And what the universe does, macro scale, the universe does on the micro scale. It all has to operate according to a fixed order. Now, it's with humans, there's a little bit of a conundrum. Humans can choose. What can they choose? They can choose to operate in a fixed order, or they can choose to do their own thing.
Sounds like I wasn't as far off topic as I thought I was.
Now, what do I mean by that? They can choose to behave in accordance with common law, or they can choose to do their own thing according to how they, that choice is going to put them out of harmony with the fixed order of things. The devil is the god of disorder. And what ultimately happens to a system that is disordered?
Is that the word entropy?
That is the word entropy, which is the third law of thermodynamics.
See, you can't teach an old dog some simple new tricks.
What is the name of the devil in Revelation chapter 9?
Serpent.
Revelation chapter 9. So don't be so quick. Apollyon and Abaddon. And what are those two names?
Destroyer.
Destroyer. Destroyer. God is not a destroyer. You go, wait a minute. What does he do? I know he is, because what does he do at the end?
Destroys evil.
He judges. He judges chaos and gives it its final end. Chaos comes to an end. What is chaos? Chaos is lawlessness, right? Chaos, they call it anarchy, chaos is lawlessness. What lie has the devil promoted for the end time? It is Novus Ordo Seclorum, a new secular order, and order out of chaos. Order out of chaos.
Our organization of original choice, or habit that we used to belong to, or still are fond of in some ways. I noticed that their current lesson plan for Sabbath school, and it took all the restraint I had to not to pick one up and take it home with me. They were addressed to specific people, so I didn't feel at liberty to take But their theme for the next quarter is end time preparation. I was so interested in what they had to, might have to say.
What is interesting to me is that the dark powers of this world, if they are saying that they are going to bring order out of chaos, are admitting one thing.
It's chaotic.
It is chaos.
Yeah.
Here on Earth. And they are the ones that are going to order it. But their order is dictatorial, punitive, and sadistic. In other words, if you don't cooperate with them, they will kill you. And their order is a whole bunch of zombie slaves.
I suppose God's critics would come to this, the same conclusion through erroneous observation with God.
Of course they would. All you have to do is look around you in the world today and see the same critics.
If you don't cooperate with him, he's going to kill you. Judgment.
What he gives you is what you have chosen. That is it. He gives you what you choose. If you choose lawlessness, which is disorder, you choose destruction because that is the end of disorder. If God just left this world to go to its final destination, it would be the third law of thermodynamics. And what is that?
Entropy.
Decay. Now,
quickly define it. Entropy.
Entropy is decay. It's
self-destruction.
So, yeah. And if he cut this world loose, it would no longer behave according to the fixed order of creation. You know, when God created during that 6 days of creation, at the end of each day, the pronouncement was made.
Mm-hmm.
It is good. What does that mean? It behaves according to the laws by which it was created. So, behavior is important. Why? Because God is a tyrannical dictator? No. God is not a tyrannical dictator. But everything that is connected to God must behave according to a fixed order. If it doesn't, then it goes into disorder and chaos.
God doesn't ask you to do the impossible, which Paul would say is impossible, in order to have your behavior conform to God's ways and rules. God enables that process to occur if you follow the instruction manual. So you benefit, and God enables you to benefit. It's not a hopeless situation.
Exactly. In a world where righteousness dwells completely, that is the ideal system to live in, because nobody is against anyone else. No one is stealing someone's property. No one is harming someone. No one is lying about someone. There's no devious behavior. It is a world that we cannot imagine because we've never experienced it. If you look at the Ten Commandments, That, in effect, is the natural, the common law. And which one of those laws is tyrannical and overbearing? Basically, it boils down to this. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and strength. Love. And love your neighbor as you love yourself. Is that difficult? Is that overbearing? Is that a far reach for anyone to comply with? No. So we have about 3 minutes left, and we'll get started. I'm going to start in 1 Samuel, chapter 8, starting with verse 1. As I have said before, Samuel was the last judge and the first prophet in Israel. I'm not going to go into the story of how Samuel became a judge, other than to say that his mother had not been able to become pregnant, and she wanted a child, and she prayed and prayed and prayed. And to make a long story short, she had a child. Her child's name was Samuel. She had promised to give the child into the service of God on the day that he became accountable, the age of accountability. And so he was living in the temple precinct with the priest Eli. And one night, while he was on his bed, he heard his name being called. Anyway, Samuel was a great man. And he judged Israel well. In fact, Saul felt so highly of Samuel that after Samuel's death, he sought a seer, to a witch, to bring Samuel back from the dead so he could consult him on a matter. Of course, the spirit that the witch produced was not that of Samuel. When Samuel grew old, he appointed his two sons as judges over Israel. That was a big mistake. Probably maybe the only mistake that Samuel made. I don't know. I'm not going to say that. But appointing his two sons as judges over Israel was a bad move. The name of the firstborn was Joel, that of the younger Abijah. They were judges in Beersheba. But his sons did not follow his ways. They wanted money, taking bribes and perverting justice. Then all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah. "Look," they said to him, "you are old, and your sons do not follow your ways. So give us a king to rule over us like the other nations." It displeased Samuel that they should say, "Let us have a king to rule us." Samuel, I know, felt responsible because of the actions of his sons. Now, if I were Samuel and this was my situation, I know that God called all the judges. They just didn't appoint themselves. From what I understand, God appointed them. But Israel had come to the point where they were not listening to God. They had never really listened to the judges. And the reason they were calling for a king is because they didn't know they had one. They didn't know that God was their king. God was a God like the gods of the nations, and they knew that the gods of the nations had a king to do their dirty work. So,
it was another case where they chose to be literal instead of spiritual.
Yes. So God knew that they really didn't want him to be their king, and this, what happened here, probably the reason that he didn't tell Samuel to go to someone to take over from him for a judge is because God realized that the judges were no longer needed. The people didn't listen to the judges. And so this was just the opportunity. The people wanted a king. And we read now in verse 6, it displeased Samuel that they should say, let us have a king to rule us. So he prayed to Yahweh. But Yahweh said to Samuel, obey the voice of the people and all they say to do, for it is not you they have rejected. They have rejected me from ruling over them. So why was it that the chosen people of God had rejected the God who had chosen them, the God of their fathers? They didn't want to behave. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to obey. They wanted to do their own thing. They wanted to be like the other nations around them. I think about today, and you look at the godly, quote-unquote, people. What are they looking for? What are they expecting? What have they chosen? Have they chosen a way of order? They believe. Dennis, would you be so kind as to read that verse out of Romans chapter 4?
I will do that. 4:15. Hang on here. I will have it in just a moment. Romans 4.
But where there is no law.
It says, I'll read verse 14 too.
Okay.
4:14-15. For the law brings about wrath. But where there is, for those who are of the law are heirs. Faith is made void and the promise is nullified. For the law brings about wrath. But where there's no law, there's no violation.
So, what is Paul saying in essence?
Get rid of the law.
He's saying that
there's no violation.
Law brings destruction. He's saying order brings destruction and disorder brings order. Do you see that? So what Paul is in fact saying is order out of chaos. And you go, whoa, he's not saying chaos. He's saying where there is no law, there is no violation. What does that mean?
Oh, go ahead.
Like the non-scientist he was, did he produce any evidence for his theory?
Listen to Jesus in Matthew 24, verse 11 and 12. Many false prophets will arise and mislead many. But lawlessness will be increased, and the love of people will grow cold. Okay, going backwards. The love of people, what are they loving? Lawfulness. That's what they're loving, the law. But lawlessness will be increased. Who will do that? False prophets.
What is that text mean, Dennis?
Matthew 24:11. 10 and 11 and 12, 10, 11 and 12, really, because lawlessness is increased. What is lawlessness? According to Paul, it is order.
And the love of most will grow cold is people's responsibility, feeling of responsibleness to their environment. You know, taking care of the earth, taking care of the underprivileged, you know. And the thing is that people still have, by and large, still have a care for other people, especially that have been hit by some hurricane or tornado or flood or something like that. There are still people who go to help these other people who have had their lives uprooted and made chaotic. But what the Son of God is saying there is because of the increase of chaos, lawlessness. There's a text that I want to read here in Matthew 7. And starting with verse 15. Beware, 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 beware of false prophets who come to you disguised as sheep, but underneath are ravenous wolves. Sound like deep state, doesn't it? You will be able to tell them by their fruits. What are the fruits? Thorns and thistles. Words. The seeds produce the fruit. These false prophets are planting weed seeds. Can people pick grapes from thorns or figs from thistles? In the same way, a sound tree produces good fruit, but a rotten tree, bad fruit. A sound tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor a rotten tree bear good fruit. Any tree that does not produce good fruit and thrown in the fire. What is that? Judgment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I repeat, because it's important. You will be able to tell them by their fruits. If someone is telling you that since the law was set aside, there's no longer the possibility of violation, and that since that has happened, the chaos that occurs apart from the law will be brought to order through faith. If you're living in chaos, but you believe that it's all purposeful, that's the whole idea. But is that good fruit or bad fruit?
You see, people mistakenly say that God, since God is sovereign, God controls everything that happens on this earth, and we are now in chaos. I mean, can anybody deny that the world is in chaos? And since God is in control, God is the cause of the chaos. So we had better just go along with it, because if we're not going along with it, we are in opposition to God.
I mean, what does the Son of God have to say? People, to get them to listen. He came here for a specific purpose, and I've read that and read that and read that. Dennis has read that. We have probably read that text more than any other text because of its vast, high importance.
Actually, as opposed to John 3:16, which is the Christian mantra. This is the single most important text to Christianity, is John 3:16. And by the way, it's isolated. They just use John 3:16.
Yeah, if you go to 19 through 21, you get a whole different picture.
Exactly.
So most people don't even know what 19 to 21 says.
The most important text to the kingdom of heavens is actually found in John 18, 36, and 37. And sometimes we just use 37.
Mm-hmm.
But I will read 36 because 36 and 37 define what the kingdom of heaven is in a way that, I mean, these are the words of Jesus. How do you go against them? Well, you go against them by misquoting him someplace else. Here's what Jesus answered. My kingdom is not of this world. Wow. let's, you know, we've parsed that one out.
Yeah.
Really well.
Right. Well, the guy's kind of crazy, but at least he's no threat to Caesar.
Right. My kingdom is not of this world. So if you are in the kingdom of the world, you cannot be in his kingdom. All right. If my kingdom were of this world, then my servants would be fighting so that I would not be handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not of this realm.
Or of this kind of kingdom.
Of this kind of kingdom. Therefore, Pilate said to him, so you are a king? Jesus answered, you say correctly that I am a king. For this reason I have been born, and for this reason I have come into the world. And I keep reminding people when I mention this to them, this would have been the perfect opportunity for Jesus to say, to tell you that salvation is by faith through grace. This would have been exactly where he could have done it and confirmed everything that Paul said.
He should have said, you know, get on with it because this has to happen and so that I can save everybody.
Okay. For this reason I have come into the world, to testify the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice.
And what did he start that out with?
For this reason I have been born. And
just before that. You
say correctly
that I am a king.
Mm-hmm.
Who is he king over?
Heaven.
Those who are of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Those who are of the truth.
Exactly. This is the two. This
and
is
Pilate
the,
says, I don't know anybody who's of the truth. I don't even know what the truth would be. So obviously, he didn't know about the testimony of Jesus. He didn't know anything because he says, what have you done? What have you done? What he could have said is, I've been telling the truth. Well, but your own people and the leaders of your church are the ones who brought you here.
They
want me to put you to death.
And Jesus essentially said, they're not my people.
And so we read on in Matthew chapter 7, verse 21. It is not those who say to me, Lord, Lord, who will enter the kingdom of the heavens, but the person who does the will of my Father in heaven.
That goes right back to John 3, 19 through 21.
The Son of God said something earlier in this discourse. In verse 12 of Matthew 7. So always treat others as you would like them to treat you. Now, do you know what that is? Common law. That's common law, stated in succinctly, is the meaning of the law.
What's the
and
text
prophets
again?
Verse 12 of Matthew 7.
Which includes how we relate to God. If we want God to treat us well,
yeah,
we need to follow the rule book.
Treat God as God. And that's what I've said. I said, let God be God.
Well, no, see, Rick, you misunderstand, because the Christians believe that God is their buddy, their pal, their friend. First, I mean, God doesn't require anything of them. He does everything for them.
The ones that Peter turns away from the pearly gates, helped over the wall by Jesus Christ.
Right.
That's sad.
Sad.
It's evil.
That's criminal.
It's evil.
Now, I'm working backwards, as you can tell.
Okay. And by the way, that is one of the things that you have helped us with over the years. It's what I just did with the John 18:36 and 37. You read it, and then you go backwards, because going backwards helps you define what came before and how that processes.
Here is right here. This is the key. This is the key to what was said in John 18,
34, 30, 35, and 36. 36, 37, and in Matthew 24, 10 and 11.
It is also in Revelation 12, 17. It is also in Matthew 24, where he says, this gospel of the kingdom, this gospel of the kingdom. He went from cities and towns, healing the sick, cleansing, casting out demons.
That's Matthew 24:14.
Proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom. The gospel of the kingdom is the testimony of Jesus. And every teaching that is not 100% in line with the testimony of Jesus is not the gospel of the kingdom. It is a lie. Here is the key. Matthew chapter 6, verses 22 and 23. The lamp of the body is the eye. And you remember, I pointed out that it doesn't say the eyes. We need to understand this in the spiritual context that it is given. The spiritual eye is the intellect, and it is equated with the you could say hippocampus and the pineal gland. In other words, the third eye. The third eye. This is the eye that is the lamp of the body. Now, we have light in darkness, right? In John chapter 1, we have the darkness. All that came to be had life in him. This is verse 4. And that life was the light of men. A light that shines in the dark. A light that darkness could not overpower. And where is this darkness? It is in the body, in the soul. And how is that lit? Information in the intellect. The eye is the lamp of the body. So we're not talking about your two eyes that you see with, although they are a component of how you see with your eye that is the lamp of your body. It follows that if your eye is sound, your whole body will be filled with light. But if your eye is diseased, your whole body will be all darkness. Then the light in you is darkness, what darkness that will be here spiritually. And people that are all like, yeah, okay, yeah, the your eyes and yeah, there's light and no. He is talking about your intellect. Your intellect is your spiritual eye. And this is not spiritualism. Spiritualism borrows a lot from the truth. They know how to use this stuff, and the devil knows how to use it and corrupt it.
That darkness can be explained by the four components and progressions of information, knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. Well, darkness results when there's information that's not true and knowledge, which is the valued information, which creates total lack of understanding, which creates no wisdom.
This eye that he's talking about here, that is the lamp of the body, is the one where you understand, you take in the spiritual information and process it so that you understand what he's saying between the lines. I know we're about out of time. It's when Jesus was announcing to his disciples that he was going to go away and he was going to go back to the Father. And they said, well, where are you going? And he says, well, you know where I'm going and you know the way. And we don't even know where you're going. How do we know the way? They had been hearing and watching with their eyes and their ears, but they hadn't got it.
They hadn't been seeing
they
and
didn't,
listening
they did
and
not,
seeing.
They did not see this with the eye that is the lamp of their body, the intellect. They didn't see it. They didn't get it. This is vastly important. The darkness that John talks about, that the light came into, the one light who testifies to the truth, and he is not Paul. Paul is not the light shining in the darkness. Paul is the darkness making itself manifest. The Son of God came here with a message that's spiritual component lights the darkness in us. It drives the darkness out so that our whole body is filled with light. But this is spiritual. But the spiritual must be accomplished through the spoken testimony of truth. It's the only way this is going to happen. When we come to the judgment, God is going to be looking for light. And those who are filled with light will be ushered into the kingdom. Those still filled with darkness will be set aside and held for judgment.
Wow, boy, that was a terrific study. Thank you, Rick. We encourage our listeners to download this or any of the other over 900 programs that we have uploaded over the last number of years. We encourage you to go to our website at spiritoftruthministry.net and look around. We also encourage you to pray for us as we pray for all of you, that the Spirit of God will move on us and bring us to the truth. So, on behalf of Spirit of Truth Ministry, this is Dennis Neufeld saying so long for now. We'll see you all next week on Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. So long for now.